Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Jonas Brothers are back.
That is the name of the game on the Billboard Chart Beat podcast this week. What's up, guys? My name is Trevor Anderson. I am a chart manager here at Billboard.
Gary Truss, Senior Director of Charts.
Taylor Weatherby, staff writer at Billboard, but also Jonas Brothers superfan.
I think you got that. That's probably like in reverse order.
I think she
was long before she was a staff writer. She was a Jonas Brothers fan. And just like many of millions of Jonas Brothers fans out there, this is a monumental week in Jonatics history.
I still don't believe that that's a thing. But Nick Jonas tweeted yesterday, for those who did not see, Nick Jonas tweeted, thank you to the Jonatics for their chart-topping single this week. And I still don't know where that came from, but that's fine.
So Jonas Brothers obviously going to be the talk of most of this podcast today with the big news of their new number one single that Taylor just mentioned, Sucker, coming in straight at top the Billboard Hot 100. We are also going to throw it back to another boy band celebrating their 30-year anniversary of one of their biggest albums and really biggest eras in, and kind of maybe even the one that kicked off in some ways the modern sort of boy band era. We're going to be talking with Danny Wood of New Kids on the Block, along with singer-songwriter Jesse Chris. They have a new duet out together called Bodyguard, so we'll take a kind of a spin from boy bands topping the charts now, boy bands who top the charts then. It'll be a boy band special.
Yeah, and a big tour coming up for New Kids on the Block as well. So be interesting to get Danny's perspective on the life of a boy band member. It's sort of a lifetime position. All right, let's make it official. Let's run down this week's top 10 on the Billboard Hot 100.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Number 10.
Yeah. Yeah, 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 yeah. Gone on you with the pick and roll. Younger flame here in sicko mode.
Number 9.
I just poured something in my cup. I've been wanting something I can feel. Promise I am never letting up. Money in your palm will make you real.
Number 8.
I wanna raise your spirits. I want to see you smile.
Number 7.
It's a moment when I show up, God, I'm saying wow. 100 bands in my pocket, it's on me. Yeah, your grandma will probably know me. Get more bottles, these bottles are lonely. It's a moment when I show up, God, I'm saying wow.
Number 6. Number 5.
So you can take advantage of me. Tell me how's it feel sitting up there. Feeling so high, but too far away to hold me. You know I'm the one who put you up there. Name in the sky, does it ever get lonely? Thinking you could live without me. Thinking you could live
number 4.
Then you're left in the dust, unless I stuck by you. You're a sunflower, I think your love would be too much, or you'd be left in the dust.
Number 3.
Please me, baby, turn around and just tease me, baby. You got what I want and what I need, baby.
Let me hear you say,
please.
Let me hear you say,
number 2.
I want it, I got it. You like my hair? Gee, thanks, just bought it. I see it, I like it. I want it, I got it.
Wearing a ring, but ain't gonna be no mess.
And number 1.
I'm a sucker for you.
All right, we teased it, we talked about it,
yeah.
We didn't lie to you, there it is, number 1 on the Hot 100 this week. The song is Sucker, the artist, the Jonas Brothers, and this is the first time we've seen the Jonas Brothers in any sort of permutation, combination, solo, in any kind of group, a duo, a one-off, a Broadway cast, whatever. First time being number 1 on the Hot 100, something a lot of Joe Burrow's fans have been waiting for a long time. The previous best that they had was back in their heyday in the late 2000s with the song Burning Up, which was a number 5 hit back in 2008. So it's taken them a while to get back up to the top ranks of the Hot 100, and number 1 here for the very first time, probably already the frontrunner candidate of the most unexpected number 1 of the year. What's helping the song get to number 1 this week? Well, per usual, streaming is the kingmaker these days, and the song is number 1 on the streaming songs chart, pulling 43.7 million streams for the week. Also, the top-selling song of the week, 88,000 downloads. So when you're number 1 in sales, number 1 in streams, you're going to have a good shot at being number 1 overall. Also, don't think radio is completely out of the equation. The song is number 46. On the radio songs chart just after its first full week. So radio, you know, which takes a while to warm up to any song really, but already showing some love for the new Joe Bros.
All right, so there's a lot to dig into here. Taylor, you were part of a story that the edit department did yesterday, kind of a roundtable of how did it happen. Some great points you guys came up with. Great song, first and foremost. I think part of it, I'm not sure you mentioned this, the kind of a Maroon 5-ish sound too. It's a modern sound. It's not necessarily the sound they were doing a decade ago. This is kind of like Sugar, Maroon 5. It really fits for 2019.
Yeah, I didn't really think about the Maroon 5 sound, which is funny because I'm a huge Maroon 5 fan too. But that falsetto and that really like high rocking kind of thing is a very Maroon 5 thing. But
it also kind of, well, I thought when I first heard the opening, it really reminded me of Feel It Still. Like it had that
kind of. I actually sang Feel It Still over Sucker.
I was like, lawsuit coming? Question mark?
Nah. No, this is not a lawsuit song. I don't hear something enough where I'm like, okay, wait. I will say, this is very random, but their Burning Up song, the inflection of that in the chorus sounds just like 4 or 5 seconds. So I want you guys and everybody listening to go to listen to that because 4 or 5 seconds totally ripped off the Jonas Brothers. Slipping into the lava for 5 seconds from Weiland. Okay. Weiland, yeah.
So you're going after Paul McCartney, Taylor?
No, I'd never go after Paul McCartney. He's the OG boy bander. I can't hate on the OG boy bander.
Oh, I was gonna say I'm more scared of going after Rihanna, but take your person. Kanye for you, Gary. By the way.
So, that sound. You guys talked about the unexpected factor. All of a sudden, this was really kept a secret. That was a big part of it. Gab in the edit department, she said, I thought this was interesting, how the three members of the Jonas Brothers kind of became bigger celebrities while the group was apart, with celebrity marriage for Nick and Priyanka, the Sophie Turner, Joe, Game of Thrones tie in there. I think there's all great points. I've got all plays into it.
Yeah, I would say that it's the unexpected factor the most. I think I was telling a lot of my friends the day that they announced their comeback and their single the next day, that a lot of my friends kind of, quote unquote, came back from hiding. Like, I have always voiced how much I love them because I just am a relentless boy band fan and Jonas Brothers fanatic. But a lot of my friends texted me that I have not talked to in a while, or that I've not, we've at least not talked about anything related to the Jonas Brothers or any like pop music kind of thing. And they're freaking out, like all caps texts, people just losing their minds. So I think it was particularly in because of the unexpected thing that people just had no idea they were coming back and that they would ever even come back. Like, I think as of, I mean, even the Jonas Brothers have said themselves that even last year they didn't expect to reunite. They were filming this documentary that's going to be coming out on Amazon later this year, and that kind of sparked this idea and reminded them of the magic that they had together. But yeah, so I don't even think that a year ago, hardly, they were really thinking that this would be a thing. So, you know, they weren't even thinking it. Of course, the fans weren't really thinking it as much as we could hold out hope and really wish for it. But yeah, I think it's just the fact that they totally surprised us all and then issued a song right away. I think it was really smart of them to release the song right after they announced their comeback, because I think if they had waited, I think the excitement would have worn off a little bit. But now, I mean, now that they're on the top of the chart, I'm kind of curious what's going to happen with the follow-up singles and the, I think, album that I think is coming. They haven't confirmed it, but I think that's kind of the rumblings.
And it seems like, I mean, even though they're brothers, like, correct me if I'm wrong, I'm sure you're probably more in the paparazzi sphere on that, but it feels like they kind of all went their own way. I mean, there was never sort of any pseudo reunions or, you know, hey, they got together at a club last night, or, you know, two of them were spotted, you know, doing a duet. Like, they really just, like, there was no sort of pseudo reunion to the point, like you're saying, about when they were coming back, it was like, this is the first time we've seen them back since they broke up.
Yeah, really the only time that we've seen them together in a music sense is Joe showing up at a DNCE show or vice versa. Sorry, Joe. Nick showing up.
Nick showing up at a DNCE show
or vice versa. They've performed together at various functions that they're like at the same festival or something. But yeah, other than that, they really hadn't ever been seen where it would be rumored that they'd be working on music together or anything. And yeah, the brother thing is really just the only thing that's seemingly kept them together the last 6-7 years. So.
So talking about other angles that might have played into this this comeback, and again, I think a lot of it is kind of just a magical thing that it's kind of hard to fully pin it down to something. But looking at some different things, girls love boy bands, sort of that safe crush when you're younger. And they were so young when they started that a lot of fans were young when they were out. So now it's people who are consuming this music are in their 20s, early 30s. It sort of times out well. But how much of it plays into that? Yeah, this was a part of my formative years, and I had that was the posters or whatever it was back then, that there's that real emotional connection to a boy band that I think other acts don't always have.
Yeah, you would not believe the amount of pictures that flooded my Instagram feed the day that they announced their comeback, including mine. People posting pictures of them with several posters all over the wall, like you were saying, or pictures with the Jonas Brothers from over the years. Yeah, I think there's just a really strong pull in nostalgia. I think that there's something to be said about bands that have such a heyday and there's such a fanatic fan base around it, that it never really dies, I guess. And I think it made me think of the Backstreet Boys, because while they had a successful run with their album that came out in January, and they debuted at number one on the Billboard 200, right? Yeah. So they clearly have fans that are still loving them, but they've been around for so long. They've kind of continually released stuff, you know, and done their Vegas show and stuff. So they've kind of stayed relevant in a way. And the fact that the Jonas Brothers completely disappeared and then came back, it like made all of these feelings that everyone felt in 2009 that just kind of rushed back. And I think that there's a really strong power in that.
What about the boy band element that there's always one member for for any type of personality, like the Beatles. Paul was the cute Beatle. You multiply the number of people who you can be a fan of.
Yeah.
Like break down the three Jonas Brothers.
Oh boy.
Quickly.
I don't want to throw any shade here, but quickly.
In your best summation, you know.
At least back when they were in their prime. I mean, who knows? 2019 may be their prime.
Right. That's when Trevor said their heyday. I'm like, maybe now's the heyday.
Yeah. It might be the tables turning, which is, as many Jonas Brothers fans would know, that, yep, Trevor's doing the motions. Yeah, that tables turning video that they recreated when they came back. But anyway, Nick, I always saw as the quiet, kind of very serious about his music one, like the artist of the group. He was the one that was very involved in the music. The brothers mostly co-wrote all together anyway, but Nick, he single-handedly wrote SOS and A Little Bit Longer and a couple of their big hits. But anyway, so yeah, I always saw him as the kind of quiet, serious, reserved artist type. Joe is the total goofball and just like didn't really care what people thought of him, and people loved him for that. He was the comedian. He always was doing really ridiculous things. And even in the celebration video for Sucker, he was like, I just want to kick something, and then like kicks a clown. So not a real clown, an inflatable clown. Anyway, he's always the jokester. And then Kevin was just kind of like the older brother that was really good at playing guitar, and he never really got a lot of words in. I don't know. It was always kind of the Nick and Joe show. I always felt really bad for Kevin because he always seemed to be kind of the forgotten one, even though he was one of the three. But,
yeah.
I mean, there were people that loved Kevin plenty, and he's lovable. So, I mean, he just never really sang, so he never really spoke. So it was always kind of like a surprise whenever you'd hear from Kevin. But wouldn't be the Jonas Brothers without him, so.
So I think part of it, too, is that they started so young that even they could go away for almost a decade other than the 2013 Quick reunion. And they're still young enough that they're still very much in the pocket of what the age of most people making and listening to pop music are now. They're still – this could be their debut right now. They'd be the right age for that. Never mind they had this huge run back in the 2000s, went away for a while. They're so young to be having a comeback.
Yeah, I didn't really think about that they're kind of right in line with all the people that are on the radio right now anyway. So that's probably why Sucker feels so relevant. But also that plays into Ryan Tedder's involvement.
Yeah, I was going to mention the people behind the scenes. People don't know all the people who wrote and co-produced, but the writers, especially Ryan Tedder, co-wrote the song. It's one of the most accomplished hit makers of the last decade or so. So you hear the song, and once you realize that, oh, Ryan Tedder, okay, he's got this great history of making hits.
I mean, I feel like if people don't know who Ryan Tedder is, just maybe a quick shout out of some of the songs that he's done. I mean, obviously, frontman of One Republic, so any One Republic song, Apologize, Counting Stars, any of those hits, all Ryan Tedder. Bleeding Love, co-wrote with Jesse McCartney. Obviously, a major U.S. and international hit for Leona Lewis. Halo, Beyonce, it was a Ryan Tedder track. So, I mean, also kind of in that same line, like, you know, late 2000s was also a big, big heyday for Ryan Tedder. I mean, he was all over the radio.
Yeah, this is his first Hot 100 number one as a writer since Bleeding Love. He's actually never – he's gotten to number two a couple times with One Republic. But, yeah, as a writer, he's now had a couple number ones. So he co-wrote the song not only with Nick Jonas and Joe Jonas, but also Frank Dukes and Louis Bell. This kind of says it all. There's been five number ones on the Hot 100 this year. He's co-written three of them.
For the guy who – you know, is sort of the current, I don't know, Max Martin, if you want to go that strongly. Not a whole lot known about him. He's still pretty young. Obviously, you know, right in line with Post Malone. But, yeah, he definitely is the guy for the 2019 touch. So no surprise that the Joe Bros got in touch with him. Like, kind of when you add that, I don't know, that classic element with what Ryan Tedder brings. And then, of course, you add these two guys who are really hit makers of 2018-19. It's no surprise that, you know, you get a song like this that can shoot to number one.
And Frank Dukes as well, Behind Havana by Camila Cabello. So again, kind of you peeled away the mystery of how the song got to number one. You realize the people involved in the writing and producing, it's no big deal for them. They've been at number one for the last year or so with all these different hits.
It was very smart on Jonas Brothers' part to enlist all those people, but I'm sure that was no coincidence.
I was going to say that ties into the fact that this is their first release on Republic Records, and Drake is on Republic. Ariana Grande is on Republic.
Post Malone.
Post Malone. Everyone who's
soon to be Taylor Swift.
Yeah.
I mean, when you can capture Taylor Swift after her first six albums, you know you're probably the biggest label in the world.
Yeah, they've just been owning the Hot 100 the last few years. So, again, it's not like they just put this out on their own and had to fight through any indie battles of trying to get this out there. When you have Republic behind you, that's right there, kind of all the distribution you need, all the promotion. Songs released right at midnight on Friday at the beginning of the streaming sales tracking week, the power of Republic promoting that. You put that all together, certainly Republic being one of the major labels you'd want to be on to have a comeback at this point.
Yeah, for those who don't know, Republic was also DNCE's label. So I have a feeling that played into that, but it's definitely smart for them to stay in the Republic family for sure.
We mentioned Nick and Joe via DNCE help paving the way, but maybe they don't have this kind of comeback since the quick comeback in 2013. If we didn't get Jealous and Chains and Cake by the Ocean, I think that kind of made it seem kept them relevant with still, as you were mentioning before, Taylor, keeping that Jonas Brothers nostalgia back in the day, kind of a great combination of we can still have that when they come back, it'll be a big deal. But in the meantime, oh, yeah, their sound has been pretty relevant.
Yeah, I think it also proves that they still had the songwriting chops and were still able to make songs that resonated and were actually pretty good and did pretty well both on the charts and on radio or whatever other ways. But yeah, I mean, they both Nick and Joe had very successful solo ventures, which I think also kind of played into the speculation that they would never come back, because I think that there was just so much happening in all of their respective personal and career lives. I mean, even Kevin has a family of four now, so there was just so many things working against them that it did not seem like they would come back. But yeah, so Nick and Joe doing their own thing, I think almost helped them kind of establish like a new sound, because I think that Sucker feels like a combination of a DNCE song and a Nick Jonas song. Kind of like a, I guess like the falsetto of Jealous and then like the power packing kind of pop production of a DNCE track, like a Cake by the Ocean. So I do think that they kind of both played into the sound that the Jonas Brothers are channeling this year.
How do you grade the video?
Oh my gosh. Well, I'm first of all very upset with myself for not catching on to the fact that they would probably include their wives in it, but it's awesome. I mean, it's art. Like, it's beautiful, regardless of who's in it. Like, it is just a stunning visual with all of the costuming and the French mansion and the garden that they're in, and everything is so beautiful. And then, obviously, all three of their, well, I guess one is a fiancé still technically, but I'm just going to say wives to make it easier. But their three significant others were stunning in it, and I mean, they were all looking really good too. So, but yeah, I thought it was all around a very fun comeback kind of video that felt like a good ode to the really artsy, not necessarily artsy, but the very theatrical videos that they'd put out back in the day, that it feels current but also feels like a throwback. So I love it.
Other thing that I would bring up is timing. If they had released the song maybe last summer, while Drake was in the middle of his total domination for months, and hip-hop was really just pushing pop out completely, it feels like very quickly, all of a sudden, 2019, one of the stories that's already kind of becoming a story for this year is that pop is back. A big part of that, Ariana Grande, really her biggest success so far. But maybe that's playing into it too, that suddenly pop is at a higher profile than it's been, certainly throughout most of 2018 anyway.
Well, and certainly, I mean, even the songs that have been kind of poppy, some of them have been hip-hop adjacent, influenced. Obviously, Seven Rings, you know, go Google that, any internet controversy you want to find that it owes, you know, if it owes to 2 Chainz or if it owes to, you know, Prince Nokia or whoever. I mean, even, you know, even some of the songs like Without Me, I mean, you've got Lewis Bell, you know, who obviously worked with Post Malone so much that hip-hop connection is right there. This is really like one of the ones that is just, that is just so completely pop that, yeah, I mean, to that point, it really is maybe the song that you look back in 2019 and say, okay, this is really like evidence that pop was not just, it wasn't just hip hop. It was, I said hip pop, by the way, or, you know, hip hop adjacent or kind of whatever. I mean, this pop is really having its own moment right now. And you wonder, especially when you look at who is due for an album this year, who may not be due for an album this year. I know with hip hop artists, they can release anything every 6 months, but you feel like Drake is probably going to take this year off. Post Malone was out last year. You feel like he's probably going to take a break. I mean, Cardi B, probably one of the only people I can think who is gearing up an album cycle with her single and everything out. So with all those sort of hip-hop heavyweights of the past couple of years out, it does feel like that really helps open the gates even more for some pop artists. I mean, I think, you know, even Katy Perry is probably due for an album this year. Maybe Lady Gaga, even though with all the stars born, she may take the year off. But, Adele, you know, is probably due for an album at some point this year. There's rumors about Taylor. Maybe Ed's been out for a couple of years. Bruno Mars has been out for about 3 years. So, you know, to Gary's point, this all might just stew out nicely for a pop to at least end the decade on the high note.
While there is kind of a pop resurgence happening, at the same time, going back to Gary's point of timing, this is like the only major pop thing that's happening right now, because Ariana's kind of had her like big come out moment and it's just kind of staying at the, you know, height that it's at. But I think as far as something that kind of surprised people or people that are or something that people are getting, people are getting excited about, this is kind of the big story in pop right now. So I think that it was very smart of them, whether they intentionally planned it to happen when there's not a whole lot of other like fresh pop things happening, if that makes any sense. Yeah, I think that they were they just got lucky with the fact that there's nothing else really going on the way that they or the time frame that they had planned to release this song.
Lucky or smart? That's always the question,
suppose.
Right?
Could be a combo of both.
One thing you mentioned before, Trevor, with Cardi B, I guess we should probably give her a pretty good amount of credit for kind of bridging that long run of hip hop being number one on the Hot 100, because after Drake and before Ariana, Girls Like You, Maroon 5 featuring Cardi B had 7 weeks at number one and a total pop song. But maybe it wouldn't have become as big a hit as it did if Cardi B didn't jump on the remix. Seemed like that really helped it become as big as it did. So kind of see that that thread going from all hip hop last year to pop and hip hop. And since then, it's been pretty pop since.
Now I'm speechless, over the edge, I'm just breathless. I never thought that I'd catch this love bug again. Hopeless.
So one of the angles too that's come up is how often is a comeback hit either an act's biggest hit ever or their first number one, because it suddenly, until a week ago, it was burning up, as we mentioned, but now all of a sudden you think Jonas Brothers, maybe now you're thinking Sucker. Actually, I want to ask you, Taylor, because we talked about this on the podcast a few weeks ago with a new George Strait song, which you're a country fan.
Mm-hmm.
It's when George Strait came back with a new song. Can a brand new song by an artist you liked for a long time, can that instantly become maybe your favorite song by them, because you have so much emotion invested into their earlier stuff? And you might think technically this is a really good song. I can hear that it's good. But can you put a song like number one on your list of an act's favorite top hits of all time that quickly? Or do you need that time to really let it settle in mentally?
I need the time to let it settle in.
Yeah.
Just like you were saying, there's so much emotion involved in the other songs that they had, whether they're the famous ones or ones that you fell in love with that were deep cuts on the record. I actually just did, not to self-promote, but I just did a top 20 Jonas Brothers songs article that went up today. I tried to get a feel for what songs should be on the top 20 versus just saying my top 20, because I think it'd be a little different. But yeah, I mean, revisiting all of those songs, which I feel like with the release of Sucker and the announcement of their comeback, I feel like they spawned a million listens on all the other songs that they have had in their, or they have in their catalog. But yeah, just listening to all those songs, it was like a rush of emotions coming back for all the various things, you know, When You Look Me in the Eyes or Fly With Me or even something like from their Jonas show, like a Feeling Alive kind of song. Yeah, there's just so many different memories attached to all of these older songs that it's hard to latch onto a song like Sucker and be like, this is my favorite Jonas Brothers song. Because it just, also it's like a week old. So it's just like, no matter how many memories are invested in other songs, it's like, It's only a week old. I feel like you got to let it simmer before you can call it your favorite.
Burn It Up, number one on your list.
Well, yeah. That was putting a lot of...
that kind of put some commercial weight into
it. The commercial weight
yeah.
into there, too. I mean, I love Burn It Up. There's not really a song like that in their catalog that really hits that way. But I don't know if that's my personal number one. Ooh. I mean, I really love Feeling Alive that I referenced, but I don't know if that's my number one necessarily. Fly With Me is an amazing, like, ballad that turns into kind of a bigger kind of pop production kind of thing. Love Bug's amazing.
Yeah, I always thought Love Bug was so different. It's yeah. kind of a unique sounding song.
Yeah, I was headbanging at my desk yesterday putting this together because it goes from like a slow acoustic song to like a total rock out moment. Yeah. So probably, I mean, I guess if I were to really think what's my favorite Jonas Brothers song, Love Bug is way up there. I don't know if I could pinpoint one.
I was going to say, we're arriving at no definitive conclusion.
No, so. I don't really have a definitive conclusion.
Maybe too
I could give you like a top five, but okay. yeah.
So along those lines of a comeback hit being such a big hit, it's actually happened before with certain acts where similar kind of a vein where acts had a run, didn't get to number one and then took some time off, changed their sound a little bit and got that first number one. If you go back to the 80s. Heart had been away for a few years. Dreams ballad, hadn't heard a song sound like that from Heart before. Ballad like that, that got to number one in 1986. She 1986 also for Genesis, their first number one with Invisible Touch, and sort of a similar thing with the Jonas Brothers. Phil Collins went off and became a huge solo star, probably bigger than Genesis, even at least singles wise. Really helped Invisible Touch go to number one. '88 Cheap Trick, sort of similar to Heart. They'd had harder rock hits in the 70s, came back with their first number one, The Flame, in the summer of 1988. Every moment spent with you is a moment I treasure. Don't wanna close my eyes. And the two champs of longevity waiting for that first number one. All the way to 1998, about 25 years after Aerosmith had first been on the Hot 100. Again, a ballad, Diane Warren written ballad for I Don't Want to Miss a Thing, their first number one, debuted at number one. And actually, it's the only two songs, I Don't Want to Miss a Thing, and now Sucker, the only two songs by lead groups ever to debut at number one on the Hot 100. So another tie-in for that. Give me your heart, make it real, or else forget about it. All-time champ for waiting for first number one about 30 years for Santana and Smooth. And that one just, maybe that's the most surprising of all. Who would have ever predicted that someone really known as a rock guitarist would work with, again, the similar thing. You forget maybe how big 20 years ago, how big Rob Thomas was with Matchbox 20 at the moment. So sometimes there's that tie-in with here's what my sound has been before. Let me work with someone currently making hits. Good formula for a number one, sometimes a first number one.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Whoo! That was a I would say crash course, but I think it was probably a little longer than a crash course, but a full semester seminar about the Jonas Brothers. But it's been a decade in the making, so I think we can all take the time to appreciate what the trio has done. And, of course, having that first number one, you can't say it enough, on the Billboard Hot 100. So we want to give special thanks to our friend Taylor Weatherby.
Just going to say what the trio has done and what the trio is about to do.
Oh, okay. Gauntlet is thrown. Mic drop. She's 2019 Artist of the Year. Move over. Goodbye, Adele. Don't come back, Kendrick Lamar. Jonas Brothers are here to rule.
Yep. I mean, that's what they're saying with this number one hit.
So our special thanks to Taylor Weatherby for taking out some time. I know it was a big chore for you to come and talk about the Jonas Brothers.
I hate talking about the Jonas Brothers.
You probably got that vibe if you've been listening. So we really appreciate you holding on like a champ through all of this. And maybe we'll have you back on at some point, maybe at the end of the year recap to see how this prediction panned out.
With their next number one. See you in May. Thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure to be able to not only join this podcast, but also express my Jonas fandom.
All right. So you heard in the top 10, Sucker replaces Shallow, which falls all the way down to number 6, but still building at radio. So deep into its run, it's up to number 22 on the radio songs chart. So it's actually back on the pop songs chart. It had been off top 40 radio for a few weeks, but now with all the buzz after the Oscars, kind of getting a second life. So even though it falls from number one and may not go back to number one, airplay is really strong again and at a new peak. So still going strong for Lady Gaga and Bradley Cooper. So Trevor, one of the things we were talking about this week was between Shallow and now Sucker. These are two songs that, I don't know, 3 weeks ago or so, we could never have predicted that these would be the two number one songs on the Hot 100 in these back-to-back weeks. I was trying to look back at when was the last time we had two kind of surprising number ones on the Hot 100? Maybe you could say a year ago when Perfect and Havana were number one, just because Perfect is this very classic sounding acoustic ballad, and then Havana became so ubiquitous. But at the beginning, I know it's not the most surprising.
I think all parts Perfect are true, but I think the key element is it was an Ed Sheeran song.
Yeah,
I think that, you know. I mean, Thinking Out Loud had been a massive ballad, not quite as, you know, maybe slow and classical, but I think that was Shape of You. I don't think, to me, that wasn't much of a surprise. I'm gonna veto that one, Gary. I'm sorry.
All right. Work and Panda back in 2016. If you look at Work, remember when it came out, people didn't know what to do with that song. And obviously everyone wound up loving it so much. It was number one for so long. And Panda by Designer just came out of absolutely nowhere.
I think people really like that. I mean, and it's not like we never heard that from Rihanna before. I mean, Rude Boy, very much in that sort of, it's got sort of that island touch to it. Man Down from the Loud album. So it wasn't,
kind of a surprising first single, though, given that she'd come out with Diamonds and We Found Love. There was always this very, let's hit him over the head with the most obvious pop hit. This was very different.
Yeah, kind of. I don't know. I mean, I guess I just, with the fact that, I don't know, again, Rihanna and Drake just seem like a kind of no-brainer combination. I will say that, I mean, in the year before, if we kind of flash back to what was happening when Work came out, we had been really, as I call it, pump-faked by the singles that Rihanna had put out in 2015. There was 4 or 5 Seconds, which was a very different, you know, some might even
say. We just heard something about that song.
Yeah.
Sounds like something.
It comes back, right? Yeah. Bitch Better Have My Money was also out there. So maybe in that vein that it was a left turn from Rihanna in that sense. But I don't know. I feel like with Rihanna and Drake, it's one of those songs that you kind of mentioned last week about, you know, a lead single that just kind of on name recognition almost can be a number one. And obviously I think people really enjoyed that song. It was number one for 9 weeks. So it wasn't like it was just some sort of, you know, oh, it's Rihanna, it'll be number one. But to me, that wasn't the craziest thing.
All right. What if we go back?
Panda, I will give you. When that came out,
Right.
But at the same, and I guess, you know, in hindsight helps so much, but it's like, man, with this viral culture where anything kind of, you know, just kind of, you know, dumb or fun can catch on like in that kind of way. I don't think anybody knows any lyrics to Panda except Panda, but just the way it was done, you know, there's kind of people who make timeless songs for the songbooks, and there are kind of people who make just like, you know, they sense something in the water and they say, you know, we can make like there's something here that's kind of working.
Yeah.
It's definitely in that latter category, but it's still, I mean, even just now, like when you hear it in your head, it's kind of fun. It's just like, you know what it is.
If we go back 6 years, Thrift Shop, Macklemore and Ryan Lewis, and Harlem Shake. I think Harlem Shake certainly fits the surprising number one. Maybe Thrift Shop doesn't as much now that we know that Macklemore wound up having a good string of hits. But at the time, that was kind of an out of left field kind of hit.
When I was going down Gary's little kind of call outs, I can agree with this pair because it just felt very, yeah. I mean, the lyrics are kind of silly, talking about just thrift shopping and, you know, grandma's clothes and R. Kelly sheets and the way it sort of just, I don't know, just like hangs off in that structure. The horns of it, like it's almost like a song you kind of. It's like if you put an outfit together with things you buy at a thrift shop. It's almost a kind of song that you just like put together these like randomish elements, you know, that all just come together and work. I mean, it was just the fun of it. It was just like the, I was in college at the time, so especially I think it really spoke to that kind of generation about, you know, we were all, you know, broke and we just wanted to have fun and just have a good time. And yeah, Macklemore really, I mean, that and later Can't Hold Us really just kind of captured that spirit that some post-recession millennial kids just trying to make it, you know?
But when it's a novelty song, it can either really connect or it can totally miss. It sort of tends to be one or the other as opposed to, yeah, maybe this will be kind of a hit. This totally connected.
Yeah, and I think, if you look around what was happening, it was a lot of kind of up-tempo beat kind of stuff. It was, you know, We Found Love. This was the time that really Calvin Harris and Getta were really, you know, dominating so much of the airwaves.
Yeah.
We just sort of wrapped up Teenage Dream at the time. Taylor Swift was still really big with songs like I Knew You Were Trouble, which were, you know, completely sort of in that post-dubstep phase. So, yeah, for this sort of, you know, I don't know, almost, dare I say, like an Uptown Funk kind of predecessor in terms of, like, you know, just horns and just attitude and just kind of don't give a fuck. It was, yeah, yeah. And then Harlem Shake, of course. I mean,
exactly.
You know, in terms,
that's exactly what you say about Harlem Shake.
In terms of, I mean, it had no commercial appeal. I guess I don't think anybody thought this was going to be a commercial hit. But again, just like with Panda, even before the internet, you know, finds what it finds, and memes and challenges and all those things can power a song up to, you know, enormous heights faster than any other promotional element out there.
I'm going to quit while I'm ahead. I came up with two in a row that seemed to impress you, so we're going to stop there. also, in the top 10 that we heard back at number 3, New Peak for Cardi B and Bruno Mars with Please Me. So video came out same day as the video for Sucker by Jonas Brothers. Wasn't totally eclipsed. It still did really well. So it debuted at number 5 a couple weeks ago. Dropped to number 14 last week after that first big week of the first big splash. And then the video came out for the third tracking week. And New Peak, and matches the peak of Finesse. 2 for 2 now, hitting number 3 for Bruno and Cardi. And since we're mentioning number 3 and number 1, in between on the Hot 100 this week at number 2, Ariana Grande with 7 Rings. So had its first 5 weeks at number 1. It's been now at number 2 the last 2 weeks, watching Shallow and now Sucker go to number 1. But not to be outdone completely, sets a pop songs record this week on the pop songs airplay chart. Ariana Grande has now had 4 number 1 hits on the pop songs radio airplay chart. No Tears Left to Cry, God is a Woman, Thank You Next, and now 7 Rings, all since July. That's a record span of doing it that quickly. She beats Lady Gaga's run in 2009-2010 by 1 week. So fastest 4 number ones ever. We've been saying how Ariana's just going to release all this new music at once, and hasn't been a problem at all for her. Radio's been totally lapping it all up. And in that streak, maybe this is the most impressive, even though Breathing got to number 2, missed number 1. That was in that run of 4 number 1s. So not only is a record of 4 number 1s in that span, she had another song that went all the way to number 2. So it was almost 5 number 1s. But just another sign that even though Ariana's not number 1 this week, she's still totally on the top of her game, breaking records on the pop songs chart. Here's something I'm actually kind of mad at Miley Cyrus this week, Trevor, because I thought of this a little while ago. I didn't bring it up, but Miley did. The connection between 7 Rings by Ariana and 7 Things by Miley.
My dear, the 7 things I hate about you. The 7 things I hate about you.
tweeted on Monday, your generation equals seven rings, my generation equals seven things. Simpler times. Similar titles by two of the biggest pop acts the last, I guess, two generations. Miley's calling them different generations. They're the same generation.
Yeah, by the strictest of definitions, you would be right. And they're actually really good friends. They've, you know, there's a lot of videos of them performing. I mean, Don't Dream It's Over in like Ariana's backyard a few years ago. Miley put out a lot of tweets for International Women's Day. One of them was a shout out to Ariana Grande, and she had a video of herself overdubbed with seven rings while she was dancing with it from a few years ago, and Ariana wrote back to that. So yeah, the Cyrus Grande connection is very, very strong.
All right. Let's talk more boy band history with, again, one of the bands who, as you said, Trevor, kind of kicked off the modern era of boy bands, because we had, you know, the Beatles back in the 60s, the Monkees, Jackson 5, Osmonds in the 70s. And yeah, Trent kind of went away a little bit until New Kids on the Block mania just exploded in 1988.
Shout out to New Edition as well.
Yeah, New Edition as well. And same, Maurice Starr was the person behind both bands. So New Kids on the Block back, and maybe better than ever. They're going to have a huge tour coming up this year, the mixtape tour. They just had a song out, 80s Baby, that really played into the fun of that era. New song they have out too called Boys in the Band, which if you haven't seen this video, it's really funny. It's the New Kids on the Block dressing up at one point as really old guys with canes. And they're telling the whole story of boy bands. Goes from even before New Kids, mentioning BTS in it. There's one funny line at the middle where they just break down and say, stop, I need to take a breath. Because they're older. Really a cute video, a great new song. And Danny Wood of New Kids, he has a new song on his own out as well with singer-songwriter Jesse Chris called Bodyguard. So we're going to talk about all this new song, New Kids being on tour again, and really curious to get Danny's take on Jonas Brothers and other boy bands over the years. He's been in the trenches of when maybe things were a little difficult after that initial burst of popularity. Yeah, there can be a backlash. New Kids face that a little bit. But then the happier ending is the nostalgia and the reunions. So we're going to get into all that with Danny Wood and Jesse Chris, his new duet partner, on the song Bodyguard, coming up on the Billboard Sharpie podcast.
Somewhere between the sun and the clouds, I'm not alone, I survived the stones you've thrown.
Jesse, Chris, thank you so much for coming on the Billboard Sharpie podcast.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for having us.
So really inspiring background. We'll ask you about the song Bodyguard first. This great new song, collaboration. Jesse, correct me if I'm wrong, but you had visited, what was it, about 100 schools to talk about bullying, and that led to Danny being inspired by that story. Can you take us through the timeline of how that all happened and how it led to Bodyguard becoming a duet between you two?
Well, I visited 100 schools in 1 year. I had been visiting schools for about 4 years, and I decided to set a goal of 100 in a year. And I just finished that goal, I think, about a month or two ago. And I'm still visiting schools in my free time, but not keeping count like before. But I got a phone call one day saying that Danny Wood from New Kids on the Block had watched my videos of me speaking in schools to kids and had listened to my music, and that inspired him to write a song and that he wanted to record a duet with me. And it was really like a shocking phone call and just really unexpected, especially because when I visit schools to talk to kids and sing to them, it's not something I've ever done for recognition or anything. I don't ever really post about it. It's just something I like to do in my free time. And so it was just really cool that he even took the time to watch a video of me talking to these kids, let alone writing a whole duet. So it's a really cool phone call to get.
Right. How did that come about, Jesse, that you you were inspired to do that? That's a great story all on its own, that you'd go to schools and do that.
Well, growing up in Massachusetts, I was bullied growing up, and I struggled a lot with that and with self-confidence because of it. And so that's why I think it's really important to talk to kids and kind of be like an older sister to them.
What really hit me when listening to was the vocals. You guys really harmonized like you've been doing this before. Do you guys feel that connection when you guys sang together? Really, both vocals are great on their own, and then you come together. It's a really nice mix.
Well, thank you. I mean, it was pretty easy working with Jesse. We got in the studio and knocked the song out in one day. So it was pretty easy. She has a great voice. She's very focused and talented.
So one of the other angles about this song is, I saw this online, Jesse, you surprised your cousin, Christy, who has had a lot of health issues over the years, by bringing her to Boston for the recording of the song to meet a member of her favorite band. She had no idea this was going to happen and turn out to be just a surprise of her life, right?
Oh, yes. She tells me every time I see her that that was the best day of her entire life, because I've known about New Kids on the Block because of her. She's such a big fan, and she has been struggling her whole life with cystic fibrosis. Her lung function is only 30% of what normal functioning lungs do. So she struggles her whole life. And to be able to bring her to the studio when we recorded, it was just, I can't believe that life worked out that way. And it was just so special to be able to share that with her too. So I'm really glad I got to make those memories.
All right. So it's kind of funny. This week, boy bands have been a big topic here at Billboard. Not sure if you guys know, but I'm sure you guys are super Hot 100 fans. So you've seen the Jonas Brothers are back in action and number one this week on the Hot 100 with their new single Sucker. So obviously, Danny, you have a unique perspective as someone who's been in a boy band before, and you've ridden that wave where you're on top of the world, and it's, you know, hit after hit, and then you kind of hit that turn, and maybe it's not the same kind of results or the number ones come quite as quickly. And then, you know, obviously in recent years we've seen with the tours with Backstreet Boys and a lot of these big acts, when you guys are back on and there's a huge fan base out there, does this kind of surprise you, or in a way that the Jonas Brothers, for example, could come back in this way? Or do you know that, you know, even though they're not going to be on top forever, there's always that core group of fans who are just rooting and ready for that big thing and that big comeback to happen?
We got back together in 2008 after being apart for 15 years. So I consider the past 11 years the best years of my life and the best years in the business, even better than the first time around. So to me, we're on top. I don't really care what anyone else's perception is. I mean, for us to be doing it this long and just to celebrate 30 years of, 30 years old, hanging tough, that was a big deal for us. So it doesn't surprise me. The Jonas Brothers have, some of the guys have stayed relevant doing their solo stuff. So it was a good time for them to actually do it. And for us, we needed a little more time, because I think the first time around, it was so big and in everyone's face, and there was so much merchandise and all this stuff. We needed to take a break and grow up and, live our lives and have families and then get back together, and we're still doing it.
Yeah, you say the last 11 years have been even better than the original time when everything was just so crazy. Is it kind of, as you just alluded to, Danny, but just sort of having that perspective, it sounds like ultimately it's being able to sort of take a breath and just appreciate it a lot more.
Yeah. I mean, as you get older, things slow down a little bit. You learn to appreciate things more. And ultimately for me in 2008, that was my goal. However long we were back together and however long we were going to do it, even if it was just that first tour, I was just going to enjoy it and, never forget it. And now, you come into my house, I have one room that's just full of all the stuff we've done the past 11 years. I don't even really have any of the old stuff up, because I'm really proud that we've got to have a second chance and to do it the way we wanted to do it and, without any outside influence.
And so one of the things I think that a lot of people – maybe we're surprised by when you guys came back is the decision to unite with the Backstreet Boys and have the NKOTBSB tour. What a nice acronym there. Yeah. But I think there's just this real perception in the industry and from media that, you know, all the similar types of acts kind of have to be rivalries and hate each other. You know, it's like all the boy bands have to have beef with the other boy bands. All the queens of pop have to have, you know, beef with the other queens. Is there anything like that between, you know, you guys or any of these other groups out there? Any sense that you have to be rivals or anything that's talked up or any sense of that kind of competition between you guys?
Not at all, man. They came after us. So, like, what rivalry are people talking about? Like, that never even existed with us. They put out music, and we were already broken up. So I just looked at it like, you know, boy bands, that kind of thing always goes in cycles. So they were just the next one. Them and NSYNC were the next one. So doing a tour together, I mean, we just took a cue from, like, some of the bigger rock bands, like, you know, Def Leppard and Journey do tours together. And we kind of took a cue from that and said, why, we can do it in our genre of music.
I want to ask you, Jesse, I'm going to totally put you on the spot. Who's your favorite boy band? Is it New Kids? It's a safe answer, but be honest.
I am going to say New Kids on the Block. And it's not just because of Danny. It's because I've been listening to them for a while with Christy and just working, you know, before meeting Danny, I knew, you know, I'm about to meet this celebrity. What's he going to be like? And I've met a lot of artists before. And, you know, sometimes when they're not as nice or humble as you hope they would be, it's hard to stay a fan when you know who they really are. So I was nervous meeting Danny. And when I met Danny, it just made me an even bigger fan of his solo music and the New Kids music. And so I would say that New Kids on the Block is definitely my favorite boy band.
Good answer.
Talk about boy band history. So New Kids' two newest singles, they're really fun and they play up boy band history. 80s Baby kind of plays it more just the 80s era when New Kids started. But the new song and video, Boys in the Band, my favorite thing in the new video, Danny, is how you guys, that moment where you say, stop, we need to take a breath. You're dressed up as these old guys. It's just a really clearly you're having fun with the whole boy band elements, mentioning everyone from Who Came Before You all the way to BTS. So as Trevor was just saying, really sounds like, yeah, you're just kind of celebrating all this great music that boy bands over the years have given us. Is what do you think is the ultimate appeal to boy band music?
I think it's the music. It's the, you know, it's the young female audiences, and yeah, the feelings they have for their favorite members of the group or the band, the whole band. But, you know, we kind of proved that, like, and the Backstreet Boys are doing the same thing too. Like, we didn't know if this would last, you know, after being broken up for 15 years and coming back. That was my only worry. Like, I had no clue who was gonna buy tickets, who was gonna, you know, show up at the shows. Like, you know, our reunion could have been a theater tour. Like, we had no idea. And we just, that spark we lit, you know, back in 1988, you know, to 93, 94, it stuck with these girls, and they showed up and they still show up. I mean, we just did some promotion in New York, and everywhere we went, there was tons of fans showing up for us. And, you know, they were everywhere. So it's a blessing. And hopefully it's good to see the Jonas Brothers back together and they're doing their thing. And I think, you know, more and more you'll see groups having longer careers than just, you know, fizzling out and, you know, fading into the distance.
I think social media helps too, because in 94, when you guys took the first break, there was, if you weren't having new music out and you weren't touring, it's kind of like you did disappear. No one knew where to find you. But in a social media era, everyone can find out that, oh yeah, I'm a fan of this act, and they can interact with you. It probably helps. That's probably something that would have helped, I guess, if it existed back in the 90s.
Yeah, it helped us a lot. And especially, like, there wasn't any of that before. And then we built, this time around off of, you know, through our website, social media, and it's an awesome tool to just connect with the fans instantly. You post something, you announce something, it's instantaneous, and it's great for us. And for me, that's kind of what I use it for. I don't really get into, you know, anything else. I want the fans to know what we're doing.
Yeah. Social media is how YouTube, how you guys got together, you and Jesse. So even helped get this new song recorded as a duet.
Yeah, imagine back in the day, like, how would I have seen her speaking at these schools? Like, it would have been, you know, if Jeff, her manager, would have had to film her, you know, something. So yeah. It's just great. Like, yeah, that was, and it made the process quicker. Like, I got inspired, wrote the song, and, you know, we were recording it, you know, like a few weeks later.
And I guess it's a pretty Billboard-centric question, but Danny, when you're taking us back to that major heyday when you guys are having number one albums and number one singles just left and right, in the middle of all that frenzy, were you guys aware of where you were on the charts? Were the charts an important thing to you? And when did you find out, or how did you find out, rather, when you guys got to number one for the first time? Was that, did that stick out in your mind after all this craziness?
Yeah, like, I used to be really into, like, picking up a Billboard and reading it and going through the charts and seeing where we were at. It was really important, and sometimes we were finding out, picking up, you know, Billboard magazine. But as, like, our first single, Please Don't Go Girl, climbed the charts, we started getting calls out on the road from the record company. So our tour manager at the time had the big suitcase cell phone, like, it had a strap, and it was, like, a big brick on his hip. That's where we would get the calls. So they would let him know where we were that week, and it was usually a call from the record company, because I think they could find out the night before, you know, the magazine came out or like the charts were announced. So that's how we found out.
Do you remember when I'll Be Loving You Forever became your first number one? Because it was a pretty steady climb. Please Don't Go Girl got to number 10. Then You Got It the Right Stuff, number 3. So you could see on the charts really the arc of how big it was all building. Do you remember that first number one and then the first number one album with Hangin' Tough?
Yeah, it was a long road for Hangin' Tough to go number one, and it was a very grassroots kind of thing we did. We opened for Tiffany, we finished that tour with her, and then we went on to just do clubs and radio station gigs, and then as Please Don't Go Girl broke, and then The Right Stuff came out, we kind of went back on the road the next summer with Tiffany. So when I'll Be Loving You Forever went number one, I'll never forget calling up my mom to tell her, because that was her favorite song, and when we recorded it, she heard it, you know, in a demo form, and she was like, it's a hit, this is your best song you guys have. And, you know, she was so happy, I was happy, we were all like out on the road celebrating, and, you know, it was a big thrill.
It sounds like all these years later that that influence is still so deep in your heart, Danny. It's really nice to see that.
Yeah, she's with me all the time. I mean, my mom was an amazing woman, and you know, I have an amazing family. My sisters, I have four sisters and a brother, and my dad still travels with me out on the road. Every tour we go on, he comes for the whole tour. He rides the bus with me, and you know, she's always present. And I do stuff, you know, on this tour, I will be raffling off tickets for the shows through the foundation to raise money for breast cancer patients. So she's always with me, and it feels good that her name and her, you know, and her legacy is still, you know, being carried on.
And Jesse, with you too, having a Christy, your cousin, surprising her for the recording sessions. Really nice to hear how you both of you sort of, yeah, family first when it comes to all this. It could be caught up in so much of the industry stuff, but it really comes down to just the people you've always been closest to.
Absolutely. And, you know, for me being brand new, it's such a roller coaster emotionally and just everything. And so I feel like if I didn't have my family, I'd be so lost. And so I'm just so glad I have a big family that I'm so close with. And that's why they will always come first and be so important to me.
And 30th anniversary edition of Hangin' Tough, the album just released Friday with songs we just mentioned, 80s Baby and Boys in the Band on there. And really gearing up for the big tour. Danny, the New Kids mixtape tour with Debbie Gibson, Tiffany, Salt-N-Pepa, Naughty by Nature. It's going to be a huge tour coming up. And sounds like, as you said before, that you're appreciating this. You're probably enjoying it more than you did originally.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's more, first of all, because we're older, we know, you know how to enjoy it more. But, you know, for us, it's a family affair. Like, everyone has their kids out. I have my dad. My daughter's coming. Her son comes out. It's, you know, there's dogs. There's everything. But it's just a family atmosphere. And it makes it so much more enjoyable because it's not like this crazy backstage where people are partying and drinking and all this stuff. Like, it's very much just family, and there's so much love and respect for each other. It makes it easy to enjoy it.
Well, really nice to hear the story of how you guys got together, and just, again, how family-centric you guys are. It sounds like that really just permeates everything that you guys do. So thank you so much for taking time to be here on the podcast. Congratulations on the new duet. Happy touring this summer. Danny, thank you so much again, both of you, for coming on this week.
Oh, thanks for having us.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
And go Boston. Well, Trevor's from Houston, but we can all celebrate the Boston area.
You can hear them going crazy in stadiums in every nation. A never-ending celebration, baby. That's how we show our dedication. The boys in the band. The boys in the band. We do it for the fans. The boys in the band.
All right, and wrap things up this week. We usually look back at a Billboard Hot 100 hit from this week in history. And while I was looking this up, something kind of just came to me. It's a nice combination of boy bands. We talked a lot of Beatles this week. We have the song by Cardi Bruno, Please Me. Let's look back at this week in 1964 with what is the first Beatles single released in the U.S., though not the first Beatles hit. A song called Please, Please Me. How's that for a nice combination? We had Please, Please Me. Now we have Please Me. We'll just have Me, I guess, 50 years from now. Not a fan of the joke, Gary.
I'm impressed how you wrapped everything. It's like the greatest hits of this podcast all into one song.
It's like now 154. But yeah, Please, Please Me. The first song actually released by the Beatles in the United States, though was not a hit at the time, and actually was played on radio for the first time on February 7, 63, which was 1 year before the Beatles' famous landing in America for the first time, and really when the British invasion started in 1964 with I Want to Hold Your Hand and subsequent singles. Luckily, it's kind of a common thing back then, the song wasn't hit when it was first released, but after that big Beatlemania invasion, the song was re-released the next year, and that is when it kicked into high gear, got all the way to number 3 on the Hot 100 this week, back in 1964, and as well recorded in all of pop music history, 1964, by all accounts, was the Beatles' ultimate year. In particular, one fact that we tout here a lot at Billboard, very impressive, that the Beatles had the entire top 5 of the Hot 100, April 4th, 1964, and indeed, Please, Please Me was one of those top 5 tracks. So, in honor of the Beatles' first single in the United States, which was actually supposed to be sort of a slower Roy Orbison song, fast forward all the way to this week when we got another Please Me in the top 5, and actually at number 3, just like that Beatles record. Wrapping things up on Boy Band Week, we'll throw it back to the Fab Four. Here is Please, Please Me.
Come on.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget?
Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.